But anyway, time is passing, and perhaps we've said enough about the monks. If we're not careful, we won't have any time for the lay people, who are no less important. But before we go on to the lay people, let's say a word or two about the nuns. Now, we mustn't forget them either. There are no bhikshunis, or fully ordained nuns, in Tibet. And there never have been, because for some reason or other, no doubt for purely historical reasons, this ordination was never introduced into Tibet. I gather that they couldn't manage to get enough Indian Buddhist nuns, bhikshunis, into Tibet to form the necessary quorum. So in Tibet, the nuns, technically speaking, either genyemas, female probationers, or gitsulmas, that is to say, female novice nuns. And there are not very many of them. I met myself very few. I've met hundreds of Tibetan Buddhist monks, but only four or five nuns. And the nuns are of two main kinds. First of all, there are those nuns who come from very well-to-do, not to say aristocratic families, and who live at home, who don't go into a nunnery, don't go into a convent. They live at home. But what happens is the family sets aside a special set of rooms for them, or in some cases even builds a little cottage in the grounds of the property, which is just reserved for that daughter or that sister or that mother, as it sometimes happens, or grandmother, who has become a nun. They don't usually go, or they very, very rarely go into a nunnery. They continue to live at home. They get their ordination. They are taught very often. A learned monk comes every day or two or three times a week to teach them. They have their own shrine, they have their own kitchen, their own separate establishment, but technically they live at home under the guardianship either of their parents or their brothers or sometimes their sons. And this is, I think, because of the rather unsettled condition, social condition and political condition in Tibet for many centuries. It just wasn't safe for them to live in any other way. So this is one way in which the nuns live, or this is one kind of Tibetan Buddhist nun. The girl or the woman of good family who is a nun, who is ordained as a nun, but who lives at home, studies and practices at home, but in her own separate apartments. And many of the nuns of this kind, I have been told, are very, very good at meditation. They spend a lot of their time meditating. Then you've got a number of wandering mendicant nuns, who are really sort of beggars, who've got perhaps monastic ordination, perhaps not. And sometimes they're a bit sort of rough and ready. Sometimes they're very, very pious, even highly spiritual souls. Again, rather like the Indian female sadhus. You also get a few female hermits. That is to say, women, sometimes monks, sometimes lay women, who are living quite alone, regardless of dangers, in the forest or in the mountain caves, and simply meditating, like Milarepa. You get a few of them. And you've got one female incarnate lama. That was the famous Dorje Pamo. She came to Kalimpong in 70 while I was there, but I didn't have the opportunity of meeting her. And she was a very interesting person because she was the abbess of a monastery of 500 monks. It's probably the only part of the Buddhist world where you find this. 500 monks with an abbess, a lady incarnate lama, in charge of them. I'm sorry to say that this particular Dorje Pamo, subsequently, after her visit to Kalimpong, defected to Peking. And when she was last heard of, she was broadcasting communist propaganda over the Peking radio. So there must be a moral there somewhere, if one could find it. So now on to the laity. There's less to say about them, I'm sorry to say, because on the whole, they are rather less colourful and less exotic than the monks. But lay people are numerous, even in Tibet. And one often finds that they are no less sincere in their spiritual life than are the monks. The strict lay followers, the strict lay Tibetan Buddhists, observe the five silas or the five precepts. But most, I discovered, rather to my astonishment, observe only one. Their one sila or one precept will pass occurs. They only take the first precept, which is not to take life. Because they say that they consider it a great sin to take the silas, to take the precepts, and then break them. So they prefer to take only those which they're quite sure they will be able to observe. A very few just take the three refuges. They don't dare to take any of the precepts at all, which is, of course, very honest. Tibetan lay people, I found, are extremely generous. They're very, very open-handed. And they give a great deal of money, and they give much in kind also for the support of their religion. I remember in my early days in Kalimpong, I had a Tibetan student. He was a merchant from Kham, eastern Tibet, who was studying English with me. He was a man of about 35, and I'm sorry to say that some years later, he was killed in the fighting in eastern Tibet. He used to come to me about twice a week to study English, and I remember him telling me once, in response to a question of mine, how income in eastern Tibet, he used his income. He was a merchant, a businessman, dealing in various things, and he told me that the regular practice in income was for people to divide their income into three portions, three equal portions. One third went for religion. That is to say, donations to monasteries, offerings to monks, the ordering of new images, painting of tankas, alms to beggars, and so on. After death ceremonies, a third for religion. A third went for pleasure. That is a picnicking, gambling, horse racing. The Tibetans are very fond of these things too. They're very pleasure-loving people. And a third went for domestic expenditure, business, and so on. They don't have insurance, they don't have taxes, but a third went for purposes of that kind. And this is how they spent their money. But it's interesting, it's significant perhaps that the third went for the support, in one way or another, of religion. Now, almost all Tibetan lay people, like the Tibetan monks also, regularly recite mantras. They've all been initiated into the meditation on or recollection of different Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. They've all been initiated with the mantras, like Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mara Pajana Di, and so on. And they recite these whenever they can. And very often when they're walking along the road, as I've seen myself, in the evening, for a little stroll, they take their rosary or their prayer wheel, and they're walking along saying, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And you can tell as you pass them, they're quite absorbed. They don't do it mechanically. In the West, we hear a great deal about mechanical repetition, and religion encourages mechanical repetition, mechanical recitation of prayers, but there's nothing mechanical about it in their case. They're deeply absorbed. They are recollected. There's a great deal of religious feeling and religious emotion, and they spend quite a bit of time doing this. When a woman hasn't got any work to do, they say a woman's work is never finished, but sometimes it does happen that even the Tibetan housewife, despite having to draw all her own water and brew all her own tea and pound for about 2 hours the salted and buttered tea, she does have quite a bit of time on her hands. So what does she do? She sits on the step, sits on the doorstep, the front doorstep, as I've again seen myself, and she just quietly recites mantras to herself. She's quite peaceful and quite happy doing that. She doesn't think about going to the pictures or anything of that sort. She just sits and happily recites her mantras. And then, of course, every Tibetan house, every layman's residence, has a domestic shrine. There's an image of the Buddha enshrined or an image of one of the Bodhisattvas, and this is the center of the household. They don't have a sort of little chapel at the side. No, it's right in the middle of the sitting room. And the chapel and the sitting room are the same place, so that when you visit a Tibetan, a moderately well-to-do Tibetan, you're conducted at once into the sitting room or drawing room, whatever you like to call it, and that is the shrine at the same time. So there's the altar facing you with a lamp burning and incense burning, and this is the center of the whole household. Guests are entertained here, and at night, if you stay the night, well, you're put up there. They just put two or three of these seats together. They're a standard size. They put a rug over them. That's your bed. And there you spend your night, in the drawing room or in the chapel, as you like to call it. And that's the center of the household. And there's an unconscious effect and influence all the time that this is the center. The chapel is the center. The image is the center. Your point of reference is that. Your point of reference is there. And then again, Tibetan lay people love to go on pilgrimage. There's a great deal of the nomad in the Tibetan. He loves to wander. He loves to go on long journeys, hundreds and thousands of miles. He loves to wander all over Tibet, all over India even, visiting the shrines and the holy places. And sometimes again he likes to go into retreat and to meditate. He'll say to his wife, "Well, I'm going away for a few months, just look after the children, carry on with the business." The Tibetan wife is very, very capable. And lots of governors of provinces just send their wives to govern the province and they stay in Lhasa and have a good time. It's a well-known thing. And the Tibetan woman is, as I say, very, very capable. She can do whatever her husband can do. So off goes the husband into retreat, or the brother or the son, as the case may be. Maybe they spend 3 months meditating, reciting mantras, and then they come back. As I've suggested, the lay women also are very active in religious life. And they're very, very much in evidence at all religious functions. Wherever you go, religious functions, celebrations, pujas, meetings, lectures, the women are there to the fore. And if a great incarnate lama walks down the street, well, scores of women sometimes will come running up just to ask for his blessing. And often the women take the initiative and they've got their own religious organizations, and they themselves, quite independently of the men, organize their own processions and their own meetings and their own lectures, their own publications even, and so on.